First will be Ms. Katie Fahey, who is the founder and director of Voters Not Politicians. And then we'll give time to Mr. Tony Dott from Michigan Freedom Fund. So you have the bios. I'm going to not waste any more time and let Katie Fahey come up here and get this thing started.
First of all, I want to start off saying thank you so much for coming out on a Monday night to talk about redistricting reform. I think that speaks volumes to all of you guys and how important you take your vote and making sure you're informed voters. I can start anyways, but if you wanna, I don't know if we can try and, sounds good. So I'm actually here today. I have a background in sustainability. I used to be doing waste and recycling, but I made a Facebook post that accidentally started a political movement. And then I found myself leading a constitutional amendment reform. In 2016, I've always really cared about how I personally vote. I was really passionate about the drain commissioner race in Kent County and who was gonna win. But my friends and family didn't always share that passion. I was always the one being like, are you registered? Are you showing up to vote? What's going on? And kind of begging people to actually participate in that. As I was watching the 2016 election unfold, I started noticing a lot of my friends and family for the first time actually paying attention. I was at a birthday party, and overheard my family talking about the differences in the healthcare and childcare policies of Bernie Sanders, Donald Trump, and Hillary Clinton. I was like, you guys don't even show up to vote, and you're talking about the policy differences between presidential candidates? This is awesome. And as I kind of stood back and was just listening to what they had to say, I really saw that my friends and family were coming out because of two politicians, Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders. And again, when I was kind of like taking a step back and I was like, I wonder why these two are mobilizing so many people. I think it's because of two messages, drain the swamp and the political revolution. And to me, even though they were two different messengers with different styles, they were actually talking about the same thing, about how people are so frustrated with the status quo. They don't feel like politicians are accountable to them. They feel like special interests and lobbyists have more of a say than the average day person. So why show up and bother to vote if it's not going to matter anyways? And I understood the appeal of a person, a politician, coming and saying that they will come and change things. But I remembered learning in fourth grade about democracy and, you know, the Boston Tea Party, and then how we fought to really try and make it so that we could have a democratic republic and so that we could have our votes elect representatives who would then go into Congress and pass laws that reflect how we feel. And then I remember quickly learning about gerrymandering and basically being told that, yeah, so we have the system, but those politicians who get elected get to redraw their own lines and choose whether they want you to be their voter or not. And it kind of makes it so that it doesn't really equate to how the people vote is what the representation looks like. And I remember raising my hand and saying, okay, but like, if we know that's wrong, why don't we do anything about it? And I'm a millennial, and the teacher said, well, that's the way it's always been done. And that is like my least favorite answer. Like when my dad's like, because I said so, I'm like, absolutely not. Like that is not how I feel. That is not logical. So gerrymandering had always been something that kind of bothered me. Never thought I'd do something about it. But to me, after the election, when everybody went back to, hey, you know, you voted for this person, so you're evil. You voted for this person, so you're evil. I really saw an opportunity where I could say like, actually, I think there's this systemic reform that you guys all would care about because I hear that nobody feels listened to and you want more accountability and representation. And why don't we try and focus on that? So the Michigan Constitution, Section 1, Article 1, opens with all political power is inherent in the people. And I guess I took that a little literally because then I wanted to go and really see what that power looks like. So, in an attempt before going to Thanksgiving to see if there was any way we could not end up screaming at each other, I made a very simple Facebook post. I'd like to take on gerrymandering in Michigan. If you're interested in doing this as well, please let me know. Smiley face. I've quickly found that the emoji is the key to saving democracy. On TimeHop, it actually showed that I made almost the exact same post about a year earlier, but didn't remember doing that at all. But it didn't include a smiley face, and nobody liked it. So I'm pretty sure that's why. But what was really cool, and I did not have an immense number of followers, I am not a social media influencer, is a bunch of people started responding and saying, yeah, I want to do that too. What do we do? How can we make this happen? And so from there, I started a Facebook group. It had the very catchy name of Michiganders for Nonpartisan Redistricting Reform. The acronym is MNPFR, so very catchy. But had a couple rules for joining that. The first rule was that I wanted only people there representing themselves. I was at a point where I really felt like, and I still feel this way, special interests and politicians have way more of a say than we as just regular voters. And I wanted one place on the internet where we could just be regular people and not have to worry about other people interfering. Then the second rule is that in order to be a part of this group, you had to make a pledge that you were going to support creating a solution to gerrymandering that didn't advantage or disadvantage any Michigan voter based on their political preference. And that was really because I come from a family that has very different political beliefs, and I really just wanted something that we could agree on, because talking more and more about which politician and which party is doing what isn't making progress for anyone. And then the third thing was a basic understanding of wanting to respect each other and allow for people to share freely. So what that ended up leading to, and again, never thought that it would. Actually, I go to Thanksgiving and my family doesn't know what gerrymandering is, which is sad. But now all of them actually have been supportive and been a part of the campaign, which is really exciting. But it quickly led to a group of internet strangers. None of us had known each other. We just answered these questions saying, okay, what can we do about this? And actually, I love the intro because we talked about, do we bring a lawsuit? Do we try and work with the legislature? We saw over 11 different bills had been brought up, never with bipartisan support. When Democrats were in charge of gerrymandering in Michigan, Republicans tried to pass change. When Republicans were in charge of gerrymandering, Democrats tried to introduce change. Yet our legislature had never even brought any of these measures up for a vote. So we saw a big rogue clothes sign there. And then we knew about the citizen-led ballot initiative process. And so I was a little naive. I thought when there's a citizen-led ballot initiative that normally that's led by citizens. I didn't realize that often it's just led by special interests. But I said, hey, our Michigan Constitution says we can do this, so let's do it. And quickly, now we have grown into an organization with over 14,000 volunteers. We have people in all 83 counties, and we are have a ballot proposal on. So in Michigan, if you can write constitutional language, and then for 2018, gather 315,654 registered Michigan voter signatures in 180 days, then you can bring before the whole public of Michigan a ballot initiative. And then ultimately, if 50% plus one vote ends up voting affirmatively yes for a proposal, it can pass. And so our name is Voters Not Politicians. We're also Proposal 2. But the reason that's our name is not because we hate politicians. It's actually because we think that voters should be drawing these district lines and not politicians. Because honestly, the conflict of interest comes from the politicians, the people who are about to run in the election, are getting to pick and choose whether they want you to be their voter or not. And we think that even just by moving it to having voters in charge, that voters have the best interest of the people and politicians don't have that incentive. So that's kind of a high level overview. In Michigan, we're especially lucky because we are genuinely a purple state, which means that we have had both the Democrats and the Republicans take over this process. So I know we just got an overview of gerrymandering, but basically it means that these election maps get manipulated for a political reason. So somebody guesses how you vote, probably by looking at your credit card data, your internet data, all of the data that's collected on us that politicians already use to try and win elections. And they decide, okay, do I like the way you vote, so I want you to be my voter? Do I not like the way you vote, so I don't want you to be a voter? And basically, they only look at us as whether we're a Democrat or a Republican, or somebody that is going to show up to vote or not going to show up to vote. And I wish, personally, that we were looked at as actual people and communities, but that's for later. Happens once every 10 years. There's a couple different rules. Equal population is one of them. One person, one vote is what we were talking about earlier. The voting rights Rights Act is another thing that's federally mandated, meaning that majority-minority communities should not be able to be divided. That's why racial gerrymandering has been proven illegal, and we've been able to overturn some maps that way. But besides that, it is up to the states to decide how else should these be drawn, including who does the drawing of the lines what criteria should be used. This is an example of one of the districts near Detroit. Quite often you will hear, gerrymandering doesn't exist. There's nothing, that's how our communities look. I don't think that that's quite true. If you look up at the 11th where it intersects with the 14th, that's actually Farmington and Farmington Hills. There's three houses in that little tiny cutout, and then it goes up around it. And I think if you ask the people of Farmington and Farmington Hills if they had a lot in common, they would probably say yes. But one community happens to vote more Democrat, and one community happens to vote more Republican. And that's probably why those lines are drawn that way. This is an example near my house. I'm from Grand Rapids. I'm not sure if everybody's familiar with Now This. It's a kind of, they have make internet videos, but on one street behind my alma mater, which is Aquinas College, there's actually the 73rd, 76th, and 75th house districts. And if you look back up that map, it goes between Grand Rapids and East Grand Rapids, and you can't even usually tell when you're doing that. It took me 46 seconds to run that, and I am not in shape. But I think it just kind of goes to show that, you know, people live on the same street, their kids go on the same school bus, they're probably would identify as a community, yet they're politically divided. And a lot of people don't know who their representatives are. And when the lines are kind of crazy like that, it kind of makes sense why, because even their neighbors have directly a different representation. This is an example that's actually really good for here at Western. This is District 3, Justin Amash's district. He actually has this great quote that he said at one of our town halls, and I'll be paraphrasing, but brought up that for the first time, I think ever, Kalamazoo and Battle Creek in the last redistricting were separated from each other. Kalamazoo and Battle Creek, I'm sure I don't have to tell most of you this, have a lot in common, a lot of commerce in common, a lot of people work in one place and live in the other, and they also share an airport. So Justin Amash even says that, you know, what do? Represent half of an airport? And if the people of Battle Creek and Kalamazoo decided that Grand Rapids and Battle Creek had more in common, then I guess I could be okay with it, but I don't think that that's why the lines were drawn. I think those lines were probably drawn for political influence. And then I don't know, and then recently some emails have come out to basically show that. And what gets lost there is common sense issues being handled. In one of the states that's passed an independent citizens redistricting commission, one of the number one things they heard from some of the communities that they were going and saying, how do you think these lines should be drawn? Were people saying, we literally just want our districts to be horizontal because they keep only being vertical. And so all of our freeways are really well done that are north and south, but there are none that are east-west. So we actually go into another state to use their east-west highways because you guys all want the credit for your congressional district getting the funding. And that makes a lot of sense. I think a lot of us see some pretty bad roads around Michigan too. But common sense doesn't come into play or to the forefront when you have people just looking at constituents as political parties for them to be more in power than somebody else. The people get lost in that decision making. And so really what we've lost from this process, virtually none of our statewide elections are competitive. If we don't have competitive elections, then our politicians are not afraid to lose our votes. The power we have as people is our vote. When we like somebody, we should be able to elect them. When we don't like somebody, we should be able to unelect them. It should still be the majority of people, but these lines are drawn behind closed doors with mathematicians, with computer scientists, trying to calculate over the next 10 years how demographics will change and how they can try and guarantee that their party is going to be able to win without having to fight to win for 10 years at a time. And what really breaks my heart as a young voter who hasn't even been able to vote for 10 years yet is that you have people, millions of people in the state who then feel like their vote doesn't matter for 10 years at a time because somebody wants it to not matter. And you don't feel like somebody listens to you because they aren't listening to you because they aren't fighting for your vote. So what can we actually do about that process? That was that question in that Facebook post that I had. And really, the biggest thing is that we can change it so that voters and not politicians will draw the lines. When we started out on this, we had a policy team that researched every state that had anything that wasn't politicians drawing their own lines. And we did a really thorough analysis of what does this look like? What have been the implications? What are the successes? We saw in states that had changed it to voters drawing these lines that some states went from the least competitive state for elections to the most in one election cycle because of this. We saw that people were happier with their representatives, and we also saw that states were saving taxpayer dollars because even if lawsuits were brought, they were quickly dismissed because a big key to changing this is bringing it from out of behind closed doors and out into the open. But we had kind of did our analysis, and then we worked with a political scientist from Grand Valley to come up with a survey so we could ask as many people as we could what they thought would be a good solution. Because for me, when I see foreign by the people, I think that should mean foreign by all of the people of our state. One of our original Facebook members, who I didn't know previously, was from the UP, and she said, you know, they never ask our opinion. Nobody from Lansing ever comes before they pass a law and even bothers to show up in the UP to see what we think, and I'm a Michigander too. So when we went to go try and ask people what they thought would be a good solution, we actually started up in Marquette, Michigan because of her. It was the end of February, and they only had 3 days notice, and we actually ended up having standing room only, over 70 people showing up. And we saw that across the state. We ended up holding 33 town halls in 33 days, gathering feedback from thousands of Michiganders. We wrote letters to Democrat clubs, Republican clubs, Green Party clubs, Libertarians, to township supervisors and mayors saying, hey, we're coming and asking opinions. Please let as many people as you know. We're an internet Facebook group, but we'd love to get people's opinions. And at those town halls, we would go over what is redistricting, what does it look like in Michigan, what does it look like in states that have something that's not politicians drawing lines, and then giving that survey, asking people how they felt. And what we saw, really, is that even more unpopular than politicians, people really don't like lobbyists and special interests being able to be in that room when we, the voters, are not in that room where those decisions are being made. And we really saw a couple other different themes, too. That people wanted a system that was fair. And what they meant by fair was they wanted a system where Democrats, Republicans, independent, and third-party voters could all be there together and have their voices heard. They didn't like that one party, based on one election, could just overcome the process and then decide elections for 10 years at a time. The other thing is they wanted an impartial system. People are tired of politicians being at the forefront of this, and they just want how people are voting to be represented in Lansing and in Washington for us from Michigan. And so they really wanted something where there were checks and balances on not one party being able to overcome the process. And the last thing was people wanted to see the process. They don't know how these lines are drawn right now. We're given some very vague standards that we have proof they're not followed. And they wanted to be able to be in the room, give feedback, even be able to give maps to a commission and be a part of the process. So transparency was really key. So once we had that constitutional language written, we actually had to go and gather signatures. These are just a couple pictures of how we did that. Which is really fun. We were trying to be all over. I'm not sure if anybody in here signed the petition or not. And what was one of my most fun days was we had this picture posted in our Facebook group of some farmer signing on his cow farm. And then also it was the same day as the Detroit Jazz Festival. And so we also had pictures of that. And that to me was like, this is Michigan. We are a diverse state with many different interests. And it was very important, again, that we had and were trying to reach people from across the state. And I really felt like we were able to accomplish that. We also tried to have fun with it. I know Halloween's coming up, so if you're looking for a unique, trendy costume, politically relevant, you can dress up as your favorite district. We actually have costume cutouts that you can do too. But just trying to make democracy fun again. It is such a turnoff for so many of us to try and even participate because it is so, I guess, ugly, but we were really had a lot of fun connecting with people and just being able to talk about something that was nonpartisan, that was putting voters first instead of something else. And because we were grassroots and started with a Facebook post, we could not spare any penny. So that's a picture of us guarding our petitions once they were signed as we would drive them across the state. So just a reminder, I mentioned this in the beginning, we had 180 days to gather 315,654 signatures. And what we saw was that the people of Michigan wanted this. We actually ended up gathering over 425,000 signatures in 110 days from all 83 Michigan counties. There's no requirement to get them from all 83 counties, but again, we wanted to make sure that the actual people of the state were behind this, and I feel like we did that. And we had just under 4,000 different people gathering signatures. From there, we had also worked with groups that have helped implement these across the state. So we've gotten a lot of different endorsements from organizations. And then we had a great lawsuit that was brought to try and say that the people of Michigan don't know enough about this to be able to change it. We really needed our politicians to be able to change this. Basically saying we should have a constitutional convention instead of being able to use the ballot initiative process. We had so many people show up that we filled up the Supreme Court and then had a big rally outside of it. Basically just saying, you know, we really feel like these are the special interests trying to keep us off the ballot. And all we're asking is for the people of Michigan to vote for it. And if the people of Michigan want to vote this in, we should be allowed to. Our Constitution gives us the right to do that. And thankfully, we won that with two Republicans and two Democrat Supreme Court justices approving it. Here's some background on where our funding is. The Michigan Campaign Finance Network is where you can see all that. They're a great watchdog for seeing who's contributing to who. And what's really exciting is we actually have over 10,000 individual donors. So this really was, when we had to print petitions, it cost $40,000, and we divided it up by how many volunteers we had and saw how much per person we would have to raise. So the solution, what actually is Proposal 2? I know we've talked a bit about it, but basically it'll be an independent citizens redistricting commission based on whoever is getting the majority of votes, the minority votes, and also representation for third party or independent parties. What that will most likely look like in the next round will be 4 Republicans, 4 Democrats, and 5 people who are either independent or third party voters. We specifically are taking the political influencers out of this process because, again, they have every incentive to want to make it easier for themselves to get elected. If I was in office and you weren't, and I knew where you lived, I could actually put your house in my map drawing and draw you out about 3 months before the election, and then you have to go run in a completely new district. And that, again, just encourages incumbents and people already in power to stay there. What you see in states that have passed something like this is you actually get younger and more diverse people into politics because the people, even if the parties don't change for those seats, because the people who are in those seats can no longer rig the rules in favor of them. But besides that, if you're a registered voter, you could actually apply to be on this commission. The really important part about this commission is that they are going to have to listen a lot. And so we need to make sure that we have a group of people who will match the demographics of our state, different economic incomes, different races, so that as they're going to different parts of the state, they can relate to the people that are trying to give testimony, talking about how they want representation to look. Taking again into that fairness that we kept hearing every single community we went to across Michigan, we really want to make it so that lobbyists are also excluded from being able to directly serve on that commission. Politicians and lobbyists will still be a part of the process, but they will have to go and attend public hearings like everybody else. They just don't get to be the people with the actual pens voting on the decisions. And there's a really important criteria in this saying that not one political party or person can get a disproportionate advantage when these lines are being drawn. That sounds a little wonky, but basically we're making gerrymandering illegal. We are directly putting in our state constitution that if these maps are drawn to benefit a person or a party, that they will be overturned and need to be redrawn. We are not waiting for the federal Supreme Court. We are gonna, if this passes, put a stand in the Michigan Constitution saying, this isn't about politics, this is about the people. The next part was impartial. So these maps will actually be drawn with compromise. 2 of those Democrats, 2 of the Republicans, and 2 of the independents all must agree before any of these maps can be adopted. So one political party can't have a sway over the other. And what you see in states that have already passed this is they actually want to compromise because when you're legally not allowed to draw the lines to benefit one party over the other, it's a lot of people who are just there trying to do their civic duty. I don't know if anybody else is like secretly always hoping that they get picked for jury duty. I am. I'm like totally a dork about it. I'm like, I want to do my civic duty. city. But I imagine the commission will be a bunch of people like that. And that's what we kind of see in other states too, that when you're put up there, you have lots of people coming to talk to you about these things, that you want to do what's right. And then we, of course, have safeguards to make sure that they will. And then that transparency piece is really important. We live in the digital age, yet our government in so many ways is not caught up with that. These commissions will have recorded meetings. You could actually watch online. You can send them emails. They will have to respond to it. They cannot meet unless people are invited to attend that. That's very important. And the other really important part with this is that they will have to hold 10 meetings across the state before they can even start drawing the lines. That was really to emphasize the importance of listening to communities and it not being about those commissioners, it being about the people that they are trying to serve. And everything down to so of course they're still going to use computer scientists. That's a big question we get all the time. They will be able to hire expertise to help them. And everything, including the computer algorithms or programming that go into that, will all be made public so that everybody could go and you should be able to exactly replicate those maps. Because if you can't, something fishy is going on and they'll have to redraw them. Lastly, we have the map criteria. Equal population will have to be there. The Voting Rights Act, again, will have to be there. These are federal laws. Besides that, contiguous area just means that the districts will have to touch each other, so you can't have like Mackinac Island and Detroit in the same district. Communities of interest means basically like your actual community could be represented. So when you go to buy a house, you usually buy a house, or if you're choosing where to live, based on, for example, maybe where you're going to school, what your work is, the school districts, if you have a family, maybe where your church is. Those things right now are not taken into account, kind of those common sense things. That airport example from Battle Creek in Kalamazoo, right now the legislature is not allowed to incorporate those common sense community aspects, and this will make it so that people can, and that's the really important part about people giving testimony. Then no advantage can be given to a party, politician, or candidate. That's that really important make gerrymandering illegal piece. They'll have to respect existing city, township, and county boundaries. And lastly, why you want them to be as compact as possible, because maybe you'd have a really common sense district, but if it's like 100 miles long, how does a young person or politician who's just getting into politics, who isn't a secret millionaire, even afford to go and meet with all of their constituents? And you want to make sure that it's actually practical for the community. So I think I'm just about at time. But basically, the really important part for any ballot proposal is that you have to actually flip over the ballot and make it to the bottom. There's three proposals this year. If you're in favor of it, you want to vote yes. If you're not in favor of it, you want to vote no. And going back to my like emojis save democracy stand that I'm very passionate about, is we have two new campaign emojis, which is the thumbs up and the peace sign for yes on two. If you want to remember how to do that, but yeah, that's a good overview, I think. So
thanks very much, and now we're going to turn it over to Tony Daunt.
I do not have a PowerPoint, because if the millennial can't figure out at times, there's no way a Gen Xer is going to do that, so I'm just paper in my brain. So thank you for having me. Again, my name's Tony Daunt. I'm the executive director for a group called the Michigan Freedom Fund. We are a conservative nonprofit advocacy organization based in Lansing. We have been around for a little over 5 years, or that's as long as I've been a part of the group. We've been involved in a number of policy and political battles and issues and debates over those 5 years. And I've been kind of thrust into this role of speaking on Proposal 2 from those who oppose it. And before I get into some of the reasons why we are opposed and why I believe you should be opposed, I do want to point out that what Ms. Fahey and the thousands of volunteers that came together to do this, it's very impressive what they have done. And I respect the work that they put into this. When having been around politics for a number of years, when we first heard about this group and that they were out collecting signatures and then got an email that they had like 80,000 in the first 2 weeks, I'm like, wow, they're really BSing us on this one. And little did we know that they were really committed to this. We saw them everywhere. And so I think they do deserve a round of applause for the work that they've done. And I appreciate the opportunity to come and speak about this. The That being said, vote no. I am a conservative. I'm skeptical of government. That is in my blood. That's how I've viewed government and politicians since as long as I can remember. I am the type of kid who would come to something like this in college. I was always the kid who, Katie, was interested in politics. I knew who my representatives were. I knew who the Supreme Court justices were in like ninth grade of high school, which, I mean, Supreme Court wasn't nearly the hotbed it is now, so that's really nerdy to know that 25 years ago. And so a proposal like this for people like me in particular sounds good on the surface. And I think that there probably is a better way of doing our, to handle redistricting in the state of Michigan and really in every state in the United States. Politics is inherently political, and I don't say that to be glib. It's just the way it is. If you have power, you seek to maximize it. Both parties do it, and in many ways, it's distasteful. Regardless of which side you're on, the steps that people take to maximize that power. So I'm not defending the totality of the system we have now. What I want to point out is that there are four, maybe five key things that are severely wrong with this proposal and that should make you pause, should make you skeptical. And I think because it goes in the Constitution and is really difficult to change moving forward, you should default to it, you should vote no. And then we have this discussion moving forward where we have the opportunity to maybe take some of the good things in here and institute them through the legislative process where we can amend it by speaking with our legislators, speaking with the governor, the normal process that we set policy. The kind of overview of them are, it's costly, it is unaccountable, it is complex, and I think importantly, because of the discussion and the idea that one of the reasons that this is being promoted, that Katie, I'm sure, sincerely wants to change the system, is fairness, and that it is unfair. And the costly portion, this proposal, as we read through it, you know, I spent numerous days at the office reading through this, and my eyes glazing over, and looking through 8 pages of text, and you know, finding holes or finding mistakes in the language. And it took a number of times before it finally leapt out at me that when it talks about the cost and how much the legislature shall appropriate for this, it talks about what the minimum amount of taxpayer dollars would be. That minimum is 25% of the Secretary of State's general fund budget. And then the salary for the commissioners is a minimum of 25% of the governor's salary. And when you look at that on first blush, that's about $5.5 million, I think, is how we calculated it based on the Secretary of State's general fund budget for 2018-2019 fiscal year. And for a conservative who likes limited government, there's a lot of things we could do with $5.5 million, but is it a drop in the bucket? Possibly. But what it doesn't say is anything about what that maximum could be. So for all intents and purposes, it is and could be and maybe very likely will be a blank check. And that is a dangerous situation to write into our Constitution. If there was some language about a maximum, perhaps we wouldn't have the same concerns about the cost of it. But there is nothing. There's not one word about what that maximum may be. And I think that, again, putting this in the Constitution, if something happens, if we get a bunch of rogue commissioners on there and they pay themselves $200,000 a piece, there's no way to fix that, to address that. Because ultimately, they are accountable only to themselves. They are not accountable to the voters, to the people, to all of us in this room. We have a representative system of government. We elect people, we send them to do the job, and if we don't like that, we get to vote them out, or we get to reward them by continuing to vote for them. That leads into the second point of unaccountability. And I touched on it a little bit of the fact that as you read the, again, this is the language of the proposal, that really the only way that somebody can be removed from this is if I think it's 10 of them come like agree that another one of them should be removed for either malfeasance or criminal behavior or not showing up to the meetings or things like that. And if you get a handful who aren't there for the right reasons, then it becomes difficult for them within their own power to get rid of them. There's nothing in there for us as voters to be able to remove one of these individuals if they are acting in a fashion that is counter to the stated means. The complexity, it adds 3,200 words, give or take, to the Michigan Constitution. I was trying to think of a way to put that in perspective, and what I found was that the Declaration of Independence, the United States Constitution, and the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments, is about 6,300 words. And so the three founding documents of this country, the three things that basically hold us together, that are the glue of our system, are 6,300 words. This one section to the Michigan Constitution is fully one half of that. Within those 3,200 words, there's sure to be mistakes. There's sure to be unintended consequences. Again, conservative, there's unintended consequences in everything the government does. Policies that I support end up having unintended consequences. Look at Proposal A. In 1994, when that was passed, I think it received pretty solid support from the voters here in the state of Michigan. We had a lot of problems with escalating property taxes and funding of schools, and the famous case in Kalkaska, Michigan, where the school had to close early because they didn't have the funding to continue. And so there was the constitutional amendment, Proposal A. And I think it did a lot of great things. If I had been a voting age then, I missed it by 2 years. I may look young and spry, but I'm a pretty old guy now. I would have voted yes. But there are numerous things that could be fixed and that maybe should be fixed with Proposal A. But nothing happens. I think Jennifer Granholm, even when she was governor, made mention of tweaking Proposal A. And man, was that a political firestorm that she stepped into. And because it's a constitutional amendment, it's such a high bar to fix these problems. This is a dangerous experiment with our Constitution to fix what I think is, in some ways, a legitimate problem that should be discussed. And then on the unfairness angle, Katie mentioned a court case that went to the Michigan Supreme Court. Just for full disclosure, my mom, Jeannie Daunt, was a party to that case. She was a plaintiff, and she was a plaintiff because of the unfairness angle. And I think the talk of banning politicians, of banning lobbyists, special interests, I think there is something to be said for at least debating, examining, considering that. If we are truly interested in putting this more in the hands of voters rather than politicians. The problem, though, is that you are disqualifying hundreds of thousands, if not close to a million people, based on, kind of what you use as the average for family members, the number of family members, hundreds of thousands, maybe upwards of a million people, from serving on this commission, from participating, from having the ability to sit on this commission. Not because they are a politician, but because of who they are related to. My mom, by virtue of what I do for a living, I am a registered lobbyist for the group I work for, so that I can speak to legislators. I am on the local party committee in Clinton County, where I live. I've been involved in politics for a very long time. I'm a precinct delegate. Anything political, I've probably done it. And I'm proud of that. But my mom hasn't ever done any of that stuff. I think the most she did was when my dad ran for office a few years ago in one of those no-win seats, where it's 65% Democrat and 35% Republican. He ran for office. She went and knocked doors with him. And she's prohibited from applying to serve on this commission because of what I do. She doesn't have exactly the same beliefs that I do. My daughter, she's 8, so right now she'll do whatever I tell her to do. When I say, you know, because I said so, she doesn't get to say absolutely not. That's not going to go over very well. But she will grow up, and she will have opinions of her own that I will probably disagree with in many ways, but I will respect them. And it's unfair for her or for somebody's spouse or their parents or their children to be prohibited and disqualified from this simply because of what their relative does. And I think that is, for all the talk of fairness on this proposal, that is a glaring bit of unfairness that in many ways I think runs afoul of both the First and the 14th Amendments of the United States Constitution of freedom of speech and assembly and then equal protection under the law. And again, why would we vote yes? Why would we put something like this in our Constitution knowing that there is a very serious and potentially fatal flaw to it that could be exposed at the U.S. federal court system? Just because it's been through the state court system doesn't mean that there isn't some challenge lurking related to the federal components, First and 14th Amendment, among other things. And so, you know, taken together, I'll repeat again that there is much to be commended of Katie in the work that they've done and what they are attempting to do. But for the reasons I've laid out, I would say that you should vote no. You should encourage everybody that you know to vote no. I'm sure that some of you are probably not going to get to you on this, but for those of you who are truly undecided on this, I hope that you would either speak with me afterwards or ask some great questions. And other than that, I'm sure I've got some more time, but I don't like to talk just to talk. So thank you.
Thanks, Tony. A guy involved in politics who doesn't like to talk just to talk. So that's refreshing. So Katie now has 10 minutes to respond to a lot of the things that were brought up, and I'm looking forward to hearing your responses to those.
Sounds good. Okay. The reason it's so critical to make this a part of the Constitution is that, especially in Michigan, our politicians have a history, a long history of purposely trying to undermine the will of the people because they think they know better. One example of that is the emergency manager law, where people tried to repeal it, they gathered signatures and then voted on it, and then our legislature reinstated it after they gerrymandered the state and had safe seats, which then 7 months later led to the Flint water crisis. There was a minimum wage ballot proposal this year, as well as a paid sick ballot proposal this year that our legislature didn't want the people of Michigan voting on because then it would be more set in stone. So they voted to pass those. And it's very likely that they will be making those bills much weaker because they have the power to do that because it was passed through a law and not through a constitutional amendment. The beautiful safeguard our Constitution provides us is that when there is an issue like gerrymandering where politicians have no incentive to give themselves less power, we as the people can demand that we create a fair system and enshrine it in the Constitution so that it's not questionable or you can't get a couple politicians in charge who are going to try and pass a law or undo all of the hard work that the people of Michigan just did. I know there were 5 points, so I'll try and address those. One I know was the unaccountability. So the commissioners can vote each other off the island. We purposely put it in there. How the commission is selected is actually through a random process. It's based on the demographics of the state, though, so that we do get people with different political backgrounds and live in different parts of the state. Not everybody is just from Detroit or just from Kent County. And also because they will be in the public eye every step of the way, I don't know if any of you guys have seen the damage that can happen through the internet when people get put on blast for doing inappropriate things, but these are people who are not famous, not in the spotlight, they're regular voters, and there will be millions of people watching them. And what you see in other states is that puts people on their best behavior or helps correct those pretty quickly, as well as the commission needing to respond to every single public comment that will be made. And because it's all happening out in the open, if something fishy is happening, the people of Michigan can bring a quick lawsuit and they'll have to redraw the maps if they aren't drawn in the way that they are intended. Right now, the only people, the only special interest group, the only a little over 100 people who get any say in this are our current elected politicians. We get no say. So I think that I definitely understand why we wanted to exclude people. The rule on there, and I encourage everybody to go and read the constitutional language, is that it's anybody who's been a partisan politician or lobbyist within the last 6 years. And so I'm not sure when your daughter will be commissioner age and if you'll be retired yet or not. But the really important part is that anybody, including you, Tony, could actually attend those public hearings just like the rest of us and go and give your input there. And the commission is actually required to respond. That doesn't happen right now. There was basically fake testimony or opportunities for people to participate. And the maps were actually switched, just a list of census tracts, right before they were voted on. And there's politicians that say, I didn't even know what I voted on. I was just told by the lobbyists that I should. And there's something wrong with that, because these are 10 years worth of elections being decided by people behind closed doors instead of we, the people. The other part, there's a talk about complexity. Again, our legislature has gotten really good at undermining the will of the people. When we started writing this language, what was really interesting is we realized that the governor actually has exclusive authority over any commission that they want to either underfund it or give that power to any other body. They can just create a new body. So we had to purposefully call that out and say, okay, the governor is not allowed to do that for this commission. And that is a small detail, but if we didn't put it in there, then a partisan politician could come in and pretty much underfund the commission and give that power to somebody else. Which again, the whole intention of this is to actually have an independent body separate from our government so that the people in charge aren't dictating these lines like they have been for the last 70 years. When it comes to the money, we pay for redistricting right now. In Michigan, the Freedom of Information Act, which is the thing that allows you to ask our government how much money they're spending or ask for their emails, our legislature, I don't know if everybody knows this, actually can just deny people that right. They can just say, nope, we're not going to comply with that, which is crazy. We are consistently ranked one of the least transparent states in the country when it comes to government. And that's what we wanted to stop with this commission. So we're not really sure how much gets spent on redistricting right now, but we know that this commission, we needed to make sure it was funded. What we saw in other states who had passed this is that the legislature, in a way to try and compromise it, did try to underfund it. That's why we put a minimum in there, because we wanted to make sure that this commission would be able to hire experts. The other beautiful thing is that this commission has to follow FOIA, and they actually have limits on how they can spend that money. It must be related to the commission, and they have to report all of it publicly, and anything they don't use goes directly back to the state. All of these details are thought of very intentionally because we're really tired of all the screwed up ways things happen now. And the other reason why we wanted to make sure that the commissioners actually, this will probably be about a 2-year process for any of you guys who want to be on the commission. And one of the things we saw in other states as well was that a lot of these commissions would end up with just a bunch of white people who had master's degrees. And that sometimes is really hard to relate to a low-income community of minority people. Like, they go and they're like, we hear you guys saying this stuff, but they can't relate and then make decisions for that. So we wanted to make sure that any commissioner who is on here could be a working mom with 3 kids who's working a part-time job and could actually afford to travel the state to go and listen to people. We didn't want this to be an economic burden. And the other reason why we leave a little bit of specificity is the really great part about this redistricting commission is it won't just impact the next time these are drawn, when these lines are drawn in 2020. These will impact the lines drawn in 2030, 2040, 2050, when all of us are gone, whatever way the kids are voting those days. They will have to be able to have appropriate funding that works for them too. When you're changing the Constitution, you have to think about how time and laws will change so that your law can stay relevant. And so we were really trying to be intentional about that. It also equates to, I know in Michigan we have the deposit law, so you get 10 cents for returning a pop can. It's a pop can and a penny per Michigan resident per year for a system that is fair and that will actually get our election results and our politicians accountable to us. Like it will cost 11 cents so that we can actually have fair, impartial, and transparent elections. And that seems like a pretty good deal to me personally. Self-dealing, oh yes. So Drew Carey does The Price is Right. His cousin can't be on the show. I think that makes a lot of sense. Self-dealing, I think, is something we're seeing a lot at even the national level, and a lot of people are either upset or some people aren't. But you know, when we're trying to think about who should these commissioners be, part of why we put some of those restrictions, including on family members, is because, again, there's a higher conflict of interest there. These commissioners are not allowed to talk about how they're going to be drawing these lines outside of those commission meetings. So when Tony and his mom, I'm not sure if you guys celebrate Christmas, but if they were at Christmas, I'm sure it would be really hard to not ask her what's going on in that commission. And we wanted to make sure that kind of stuff was prevented. And again, that people still could have their voices heard. Your mom could still contribute the maps, or my mom, or whoever. But that's part of why we tried to find that. And again, right now, the only people who make those decisions are the legislators. And so I think that when you're looking at this and you're trying to decide how to vote on it, I really encourage you to go and read the language. It's on votersnotpoliticians.com. But every single sentence is in there because we were trying to think of all of the ways that these have been corrupted, learning from other states, and even looking back at Michigan's history and how our officials have given us less power year after year. Cynicism and distrust in government is at an all-time high. We don't need one more system that we're questioning. And part of why we really tried to be so intentional with this is because we wanted to create something that would just look after voters and people, be about democracy, and could hopefully start to restore some of that public trust. And that's, again, why the transparency piece and all of it being out in the open is so key. We're held back from so much of that, and I think that's the only way to truly self-police something.
And Tony has about 5 minutes to craft his response to those responses.
Yes, I can assure you, if there was a yes sign up there, it was not some subliminal message to disregard everything I was saying. Just a couple of points kind of in refutation or just related to my thoughts on what Katie has said. Related to the issue of FOIA and transparency, I 100% agree that we need more transparency in not just in this process, but in anything that the legislature does and that the executive office in Michigan is engaged in. One of the things that we have been working towards and have been a part of the coalition at the Freedom Fund is bringing FOIA reform and making the legislature subject to FOIA and the executive office. Doesn't matter if they are Republicans or Democrats or Green Party or Libertarian or you name it. There should be transparency because they work for us. We have a right to know who they're speaking to, what they are spending, and what they are spending it on. And so, again, that is one of the points that are laudatory of this proposal, is bringing transparency to the process. However, I don't think that, you know, the issue of the unfairness and of who is disqualified or forbidden or prohibited from serving on this, I think is breezed by a little bit by those who support this. And I think it's because it is inherently unfair, and yes, would it be possible that somebody would ask their spouse, well, you know, how's things going on that? That again, just because you're trying to do something good doesn't mean that the action or the way you are going about it is just. And to forbid somebody from talking about something with relatives or anybody. That is an abridgment of their right for free speech. And then again, this equal protection issue, just because I am engaged in this doesn't mean that my daughter will think anything at all like me. My Republican conservative leanings may pass on to her, they may not, in terms of how she views the world. If you are an active progressive here at the university, but your dad is a big Trump guy and has had a MAGA hat for 2.5 years, and he is a precinct delegate, you're forbidden from serving on this. And I think that is a fundamental problem and a fundamental flaw of this proposal. And I think it's a bigger deal than maybe what the proponents and supporters are making it out to be. So that, I think, is what I'll leave you with. And again, ask you, if you do make it to the end of the ballot, and I would encourage you to do so, that you do vote no. And thank you again for the opportunity to speak here.
How about a round of applause for both of our guests?